Welcome to the Hunt Backcountry podcast, presented by Exo Mountain Gear. This podcast and the gear that we produce at Exo Mountain Gear share the same purpose: to make you a more capable, confident, and successful backcountry hunter. Straight to the point, no fluff, and no BS, this show is all about providing you with valuable information from experienced hunters. To learn more about the podcast or about our backcountry hunting packs, please visit exomountaingear.com. Well, thank you, as always, for tuning in. This episode is a treat if you are somebody that likes to get behind the bow and take your bow into the field on bow hunting adventures. Our guest is Darren Cooper. He was previously an engineer at Hoyt and knows bows, arrows, and arrow flight inside and out. We recorded this episode with Darren as a follow-up to what we discussed last week when Steve and I looked at broadheads. So this show with Darren is all about how to get excellent broadhead flight. We get into arrow setups, fletching setups, bow tuning, and so much more. If you guys have ever had issues, trouble, problems getting broadheads to fly good, hopefully this episode will give you some key information to help get that straightened out. As always, we would love to hear your feedback or any follow-up questions that we can tackle in any future episodes. And I'm sure there might be some on this archery topic, so go ahead and let us know. We'll cover that in a future Q&A, or maybe even have Darren back for a whole nother episode. Again, guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Darren, welcome to the Hunt Backcountry podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Steve, how's it going tonight, man?
Really good, man. Looking forward to chatting with Darren here and learning a few things.
Yeah, this is one of these topics where I'm somewhat self-taught, have done a lot of reading and things like that, but excited to pick Darren's brain because I know he's done a lot of hands-on research and knows this stuff for sure. So Darren, before we dive into the topic, just love for listeners who might be familiar with your work, although I'm sure many are, to kind of give us some context and background and things like that.
Yeah, geez, I've been a professional shooter, or was a professional shooter, kind of semi-retired now for probably 15 years or so, and I had about a 10-year career designing archery products for Hoyt Archery Company. Done a lot of bow hunting all over the place, and then been a technical editor for Eastman's Bow Hunting, and done a lot of writing for Bow and Arrow, and currently writing for Western Hunter magazine, and then I've also done quite a bit of writing for rockslide.com in the past as well. So that's just kind of a brief synopsis of my archery accolades.
Yeah, that's cool. Your current stuff with Western Hunter, do you have a specific niche within that you're following a certain topic or anything like that, or it's pretty open-ended?
It's pretty open-ended. I'd say the core that I write about is still technical archery topics, but I've jumped headlong into long-range precision rifle shooting and reloading, and I'll take on bow hunting topics as well. But I tend to write on the more technical stuff, and I do occasional gear reviews and whatnot too. But a lot of times I'm asking trying to answer and teach the kind of questions that your audience is probably looking to hear about.
Yeah, that's awesome. What did you do with Hoyt? You mentioned kind of designing archery products. Were you specifically on like engineering design with the bows?
Yeah, absolutely. I did basically product development, design, and everything from cams, limbs, risers, everything. So, had a lot of fun working there, and actually got an opportunity to move back to Boise to run a business with my wife. And then I'm working with her father-in-law. So unfortunately left my dream job down at Hoyt. I miss it all the time, but still a lot of good friends down there, but it was a good time.
Yeah, that's super cool. All right, well, let's begin to unwrap this topic. It's kind of a big one because there's so many variables that go into broadhead flight. But let's just start with, I guess, what's maybe most relevant. So we reached out to some of our listeners, and the vast majority of the questions they had about broadhead flight had to do with fletching setups, vanes, and that whole perspective. So let's just go ahead and start there, although that might not be the first choice if we were to start as a beginning progression of building this out, but let's start there. So let's first just talk fletching styles and vanes and just kind of give us a brief, really technical understanding of what fletching does with arrow flight in terms of drag and steering and controlling an arrow and a broadhead.
Right. Well, fletching, the main purpose of the fletching is to, as you stated, create drag. And that basically keeps the rear of the arrow in the rear and stabilizes flight. If the broadhead, like if you shot a broadhead without fletching, a big fixed blade or something, you would have some really crazy flight. It might still go point forward because of the forward to center balance, but you're going to have a hell of a time getting any kind of accuracy out of it. So there's a certain level of drag that's required basically to counteract the drag that's on the front of the arrow. So the one of the biggest keys to getting good broadhead accuracy is just balancing the right amount of drag. If you get too much, then, you know, you're going to sacrifice some trajectory and you're going to have more drop than you really need. But you've got to have enough to stabilize the arrow and get good consistent groups.
Yeah, that's a great point with drag in terms of downrange and long range accuracy and performance, because too much drag will slow your arrow. As you mentioned, you can, you know, lose velocity, you can be more steered by wind, things like that. So yeah, if we talk about increasing and decreasing drag, there's several variables within that in terms of vanes and fletching. I can think of, you know, the number of fletch that's used, so 3 fletch, 4 fletch, or simply the size, you know, going something a bit higher profile, lower profile. What are some of the things that you've seen work really well? And let's keep this in the context, at least for now, fixed blade broadheads. Do you just typically stick with a kind of a standard 3 fletch?
I typically do. But you know, there's no hard and fast rule. Again, it just boils down to the amount of drag that you need. And that comes down to, the size of the broadhead that you're shooting. So, you know, if you shoot a big, nasty fixed blade head, you're going to need more drag. If you shoot a smaller profile fixed blade, then you can get away with smaller vanes, fewer vanes, or less helical or offset on your vanes, because helical, that adds a bunch of drag as well. So my typical setup for fixed blade broadheads that's almost a guaranteed winner every time is like a 3.6 inch vane or 4 inch vane. Fletched helically, and it's pretty hard to find a broadhead that combination won't stabilize and shoot relatively well.
Is this a low profile vane or just a standard, like, you know, 0.4375 high or whatever they'd be?
Yeah, my standard or my go-to standard used to always be the Flex Fletch 360. So it's okay. A parabolic shaped vane with a kind of a medium profile, not a real high profile. Mm-hmm. I've played around with some other stuff recently because the new compound that Flex Fletch went to was kind of a pain in the butt to get to stick really well. I've since found that using CA type glues, you can get it to stick and they'll last pretty good and take some impacts. But when you could stick them with the good old solvent-based glues, they were pretty indestructible. And I kind of missed that, the old softer compound that they used.
Okay.
But lately, I've been using AAE Max Stealth vanes. And they're a little bit shorter, a little higher profile. And I've actually played around with some 4-fletch on those and 3-fletch. It just kind of depends. If I'm shooting like a bigger mechanical, like a Rage or something like that, I'll shoot a 3-fletch AAE Stealth vane. Or if I'm going to shoot something like a Slick Trick,
I've played around with the four fletch, and they seem to stabilize just a little bit better at long range, but you do see a little bit more drop in them.
Yeah. I'm curious your thoughts on, you know, I get the question a lot, like what vanes to shoot. And I mean, do you think there's a vane on the market that lends itself to more accuracy as far as shield cut, parabolic cut, you know, other than, you know, the stiffness of it, or is it really just a factor of, like, you know, how much air it's grabbing, the drag it's creating, and how tuned your bow is and the broadhead you're running?
I don't think there's any magic shape or anything like that. I do think a vane has to be stiff enough not to flutter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever shot a vane with a little tear in the back or anything, but it'll buzz and your arrow will always shoot low. So just need a little, you know, a relatively sturdy vane. I can't really think of anything that's not on the market right now. So
you think there's
such a thing as, boils down to drag.
Yeah. Is there such a thing as too stiff of a vane?
There could be in the event of, you know, if you did have a situation where you might get some contact.
Uh-huh.
You know, a softer vane might be more forgiving for that. But I haven't really experienced anything that made me think a vane could be too stiff, as long as everything was clearing well on your rest.
Right. Okay.
Just a couple things we mentioned in the last couple minutes. I just want to make sure it's clear. When you mentioned CA glue versus a solvent glue, can you just kind of briefly explain that for listeners who might not be aware?
Yeah, CA is a cyanoacrylate or just a super glue. That's just a kind of a short for CA.
Yeah, like literally go to Lowe's and pick up some Gorilla Glue, super glue, or something like that.
Yeah, and there's some that are formulated specifically to be a little more or a little less brittle. The AAE Max Fletch or whatever it's called seems to be pretty good. It's not as brittle as a lot of the super glues that we had back in the day, that I kind of went away from them because shooting tournament archery, if arrow got hit, a lot of times you might not notice it, and the back end of the vane would come loose, and then you'd get that fluttering thing and you'd shoot low and drop a point here and there. And the solvent based glues were obviously had a little more give, but they weren't brittle, and that was a lot less of an issue. But now I think the CA glues they've come a little ways, and they're a little bit more durable, and it's nice to be able to stick a vane on in about 5 seconds and move on to the next one.
Yeah.
Do you, one more question on this. Do you think the basically larger fletching would offset or still allow you to get decent broadhead flight if your bow is just slightly out of tune?
I do. I think larger vanes will basically straighten that arrow out quicker,
mm-hmm.
and allow it to group better. If it is slightly out of tune, or, you know, over the course of a hunting season, if something changes a little bit, those bigger vanes are going to be a little more forgiving to, you know, just changes like that, you know, as your strings might move over a season, or you leave stuff in the sun, or, you know, whatever the case may be, bumper rest. I think the bigger vanes are just going to be a little more forgiving.
Yeah. So it's a combination of bow tune and flat out just size your broadhead on the front.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Bow tuning has a huge impact on you know, your broadhead accuracy potential.
Yeah, I'm thinking that some of the listeners might have been a little bit surprised when they heard you mention a 3.6 to 4-inch vane, thinking that that was quite large.
Yeah, it's old school, and
yeah,
I think I'm starting to turn into Chuck Adams. I remember looking at some of his setups back in the day and going, why is this dude still shooting a 46-inch bow and, you know, feathers and the freaking aluminum arrows and all this stuff? And, you know, I like to shoot what works. And as much as I do like to tinker and find stuff that has potential to, you know, improve my effectiveness, I don't think there's a lot to be gained, really, as far as vanes go. Because again, I really believe it comes down to drag, and you either have enough or you don't. And it's pretty easy to get to the same, I think, accuracy potential or drag number, you know, if we could, you know, put a value on it with a lot of different combinations. You know, it might be four short vanes fletched helically, or it might be three longer vanes fletched with a slight offset, you know, or some combination of, you know, in between.
Yeah. But even with a bigger 3.5 to 4 inch vane, and that downside of too much drag that we talked about in terms of downrange, velocity and, wind drift, things like that, that's not something that you're concerned with for your effective hunting ranges, you know, even with that bigger vane.
Well, whenever you increase drag, you're also going to increase wind drift. And so there is, you know, a happy balance there. Like I said, when you add too much drag and you start seeing a lot of drop down range, you're also going to notice a lot more wind drift. So obviously we don't want to use 4 or 5 inch vanes fletched helically because we're going to see a ton more drag, a ton more wind drift, et cetera. So I think it's just finding that tipping point where you've got plenty of drag to where your setup's good and forgiving. You're not seeing any, you know, accuracy issues. You're not getting occasional flyers. And then, being happy with that, you can always, you know, trim down or, you know, try some different vanes and test them. But generally I find that erring on the side of a little more drag is a lot better off in the long run, because a flyer is usually going to miss, you know, a lot further than, say, you know, you're going to misjudge the wind or whatever.
Can you dive a little bit more into helical and offset? So it sounds like from what you've been describing and mentioning, helical is going to provide more drag than an offset.
Yeah, typically it will. It exposes more surface area of the vane. You know, if you look at, say, an arrow from the knock end and look down toward the point, you're going to see a lot more surface area of that vane when it's fletched helically. So when that's exposed to the wind, it's going to transfer a lot of energy into, you know, spin on that arrow. So, and drag. So,
yeah, is spinning a factor in that, or is it more drag, or both?
Oh, it's a little both, because it is it's changing, you know, the kinetic energy a forward motion into rotational motion. So it's a form of drag. But I think spinning is a good thing, because if something, say your broadhead isn't spinning perfect, high rate of spin is going to kind of normalize that maybe a little bit of directional change that you would get if that was, say, stretched or fletched with perfectly straight vanes.
Okay.
I'm curious, what type of jig do you tend to use?
I use a good old Bitzenberger. It's got a custom bottom insert in it that was made. Can't remember the name of the company out in California. It was an archery company, but they made these custom inserts that were CNC machined for the Bitzenbergers back in the day. But they just, some of the original Bitzenbergers, the detents were not perfectly 120 degrees apart, so you got some kind of funny looking arrows sometimes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just a Bitzenberger with a helical clamp. I also have a straight offset clamp that sometimes I use for target arrows. You know, going back to the drag issue, you know, on a target arrow where you're trying to minimize your wind drift, you can get away with something like a 1.87 inch vane fletched with just a slight offset, and that's going to minimize drag, minimize your wind drift, and, you know, give you the best overall performance, because you don't need very much drag at all to stabilize, you know, a target point.
All right, final question, that's a big one, at least in terms of our audience and how they've responded to what they wanted to know about this topic: aligning fletching with broadhead blades. Anything to that?
There does seem to be. I've played with it. You know, I did it kind of religiously back in the day. I don't worry about it as much anymore. I think as I kind of arrived at the 360 flex fletch, fletched helically, it seemed to matter less. But back in the day when I did it, and maybe was running vane setups that were maybe a little more on the ragged edge, or running my hunting arrows closer to 300 feet a second, it definitely mattered. So I think there's a little bit to be said for still doing that, especially if you're going to shoot a shorter, maybe high profile vein or something like that, that might not produce quite as much drag, or maybe use less offset, or, you know, an offset fletch rather than a helical fletch.
Okay. And for guys who are wanting to make that alignment, what method are you using? Are you playing with the actual arrow length and shaving it down? Are you doing, you know, the thin washers? What's your go-to method if you're going to do that alignment?
Well, the best was always using hot melt glue, and you could just, you know, rotate, heat it up and rotate the insert. Like I said, I haven't really done it recently on my arrows, but I use, I've been using the VAP inserts in an Easton injection arrow. Mm-hmm. And those I actually hot melt glue in. And so they are easy to warm up and rotate just like the good old days. And then Easton just came out with a brand new titanium deep six insert that allows you to use standard 8/32 thread broadheads in the deep six arrows. It's similar to the VAP inserts, and it weighs about 50 grains, as I recall. And so you'll be able to rotate those and index your veins to match your blades.
Yeah. So there's no issues using those, even like you said, the deep six with the hot melt versus the epoxy?
Just don't overheat the carbon, you know, try to be careful. But the lower temp glues, you don't really have to get that hot to break them free. You know, you probably don't want to heat up the same insert four or five times, because that glue will break down eventually and it won't hold, and you'll lose a point in the target or something like that. But for moving an insert or something once or twice, it's not a big deal. If you have to move them very often, just take them out, get it hot, wipe all the glue off, re-glue it, and then stuff it back in, and they'll hold well.
What's you mentioned back when you're shooting 300 feet per second, what's your kind of off on topic, what's your ideal arrow speed for a hunting bow?
I've had the best luck in that 280 range. This year I shot the fastest arrow I've shot in a long time, and it was running 284, and that was a 500 grain arrow out of my RX1.
Wow. So that's smoking.
That's only at 29 inch draw, so I was pretty pumped with what I was getting. Holy cow.
How many pounds?
Probably about 72. It was bottomed out.
Wow.
They usually bottom out at 72 or 73 pounds. So
yeah, that's smoking, man. Holy crap.
I hadn't shot a 6-inch brace height bow in quite a while. So yeah, it was a pleasant surprise when the digits rang up on the chronograph.
Yeah. That's at that speed with that weight, that is, that's going to put the hurt on.
Yeah. Yeah. You're shooting through stuff for sure.
Yeah. Wow. So man, I think we covered some really good ground there in terms of, fletching setups. I'd like to talk a bit about arrows themselves, the shafts, because that's obviously a critical component, and that'll kind of tie in with bow setup as well. But just go ahead and speak to spine a bit. Obviously a super critical factor when we talk about broadhead flight. So why is it so important? And at the same time, moving beyond just, you know, the little spine chart on the back of the arrow box or what have you, like, how can we ensure that we are using a proper spine and maybe accommodate and make some changes if we're kind of on the margins between two arrow spines?
I'll start off by saying, finding the right spine is definitely important, but I think even before that, you want to find an arrow that has super consistent spine around the shaft. And that just means that no matter how that arrow is oriented, it's going to have the same stiffness in all directions. So one of the ways that I check that is, you know, put a little flex in a shaft, maybe put one end of the arrow in your hand, another end on, say, a hard surface like a table, and just roll that arrow, putting a little bit of flex in it. If you feel bump, 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 then you've got an arrow that's probably going to be kind of finicky, and you're going to get some flyers in your groups. But if that arrow rolls really smooth when you've got, you know, 2 or 3 inches of flex in it, then it's not going to be very critical to, you know, you're not going to have to align the perfect vane to, you know, the position on the rest or anything. Pretty much they're all going to shoot really well. So that's a term that's called spine around the shaft or SAS. But that's probably one of the most important things. Cause if, even if you have, say, the right spine value, your bow likes a 340 spine and you're shooting a 340. Well, if one direction that arrow's a 320 and the other direction it's a 365, then you're going to see some erratic things happening. So SAS is really important. And then, you know, matching the stiffness of your arrow to, your bow dynamics. And that kind of boils down to, you know, the characteristics of your cams, how they deliver the arrow with knock travel, and lateral knock travel that's caused by torque and flex in the riser. So all that stuff kind of boils down to impact what, you know, how your bow tunes and then kind of what it's going to need for spine.
Is there, not to have you call anybody out, would you have any worries about bad SAS with like any kind of upper level arrow on the market? Is there definitely like some good companies and some bad companies out there that you do kind of got to watch out for?
The one thing I can say with certainty is that the arrows with aluminum cores or metal exterior shells seem to have really consistent spine around the shaft. Those are the AC type arrows from Easton. Uh-huh. And to be fair, I think all arrow companies have gotten much better from an SAS spine around the shaft standpoint with their pure carbon arrows, and their protrusion processes have improved. So I don't see nearly as much variation as I did in the past. But
okay. But it might be something if you're buying like a set of arrows for, you know, at Cabela's that cost $40 a dozen, that's probably something you need to watch out for.
Yep. I would, you know, take one of those out of the box and roll it on. You can roll it on the side of your leg and just put a little flex in that and roll that shaft. And if you don't feel a whole bunch of bumpity bump, 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 then that $40 arrow might be a pretty good value. But if you feel a whole bunch of that action, then I'd put them back and spend your money somewhere else.
Gotcha.
And keeping on the topic of kind of quality and consistency within shafts, what about the straightness? So, you know, you see the arrows commonly rated as like the 001, 003, things like that. I mean, is the premium price worth it kind of for your average hunter to make that jump to the highest tolerance in terms of straightness?
Yes and no. straightness can definitely impact accuracy, but not as much as inconsistency of spine. And then it also depends on where the arrow lacks straightness. If you have an arrow that's out in the tail section, it's not going to shoot as well as an arrow that's out in the front section. So back in the day, we had a monster shooting machine at Easton, and those guys did just loads of research on arrow straightness and, you know, different factors that affected accuracy. And it was a 100-yard indoor range, and their shooting machine must have weighed 1,500 pounds and was bolted to the floor. And I mean, it was quite the deal. But talking with their engineers, that's what they related to me, was that overall straightness wasn't a huge factor in accuracy, as long as it was kind of over the length of the arrow and not just, say, in the tail section. If it was 3/1000ths out or 4/1000ths out in the tail section, then you would really open up your groups. But if it was a plus or minus 0.003 over the whole length, then it was a lot less of a problem. So, I mean, to be safe, yeah, the tighter tolerances are probably going to shoot better. The average guy may not ever notice, because that might be a 2.5-inch group at 100 yards, where the average shooter is going to shoot a 10 or 12-inch group at 100 yards. So it's an extra
you know, inch and a quarter from center going to matter? Probably not.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, given that the inconsistencies can tend to be at the end of a shaft, I've always heard that, you know, advice as well of when cutting down to cut a little bit off of each end versus just, you know, if you're taking 3 inches off, don't cut it off all three of one end. Do you think that that could be helpful as well?
It probably wouldn't hurt. I usually just cut them off the front because I shoot typically the higher end arrows that I know are plus or minus 1 thou. And so I guess that's one of the luxuries of spending a little more money on your arrows, or I guess getting them for free in my case. I don't have to worry about, you know, as many of those details. But if, yeah, if you wanted to make absolute certain, or if you were maybe shooting a lower end arrow, cutting the end might make a difference. But most shafts are made in lengths that are a lot longer than an arrow. They're usually at least cut in half. So like Easton will make a, you know, a 40 inch arrow, or I guess it'd be more like a 60 inch arrow or 65 inch arrow, and then they'll cut it in half. So it's kind of a crapshoot as to which end might really be the front and the tail and where that bend might be. So I think the best advice I can give you is, you know, go ahead. If you're really serious about top end accuracy and it's not going to break the bank, then I'd just spend the money on the better arrows.
Yeah, so after you cut then, do you go through a squaring process, or are you just comfortable with that you can cut those square and you don't need to do a further squaring process from there on those cut ends?
I always square them on the cut end that my broadhead's mating with. I think it's, even if you're pretty careful, you can get some funky cuts that might affect the alignment of your broadhead, but also over time, if there's a gap on one side and you're shooting that broadhead into a harder target, you can actually bend the ferrule and start seeing some pretty significant wobble. So it's just going to help maintain better straightness, better alignment, which also helps groups. I don't like to shoot broadheads that wobble. If you're on the ragged edge with, you know, not having enough drag or shooting a smaller vein, then a wobbly broadhead's definitely not going to shoot as tight of groups as some that are perfectly straight. And using I use the G5 ASD, the arrow squaring device, and that seems to work really well and keep my broadhead spinning perfect.
Yeah, good deal. All right, FOC. Do you do much with FOC? Are you shooting for a certain number, certain range? Do you think that affects broadhead performance?
I think it helps to have enough FOC, but all the rage lately seems to be people talking about some kind of crazy heavy FOC setups with, you know, maybe pushing 200 grains. What I have found is that 150 grains in the front works really good for all my hunting setups. And I'm pretty much average Joe when it comes to draw length, arrow length, all that kind of stuff. I shoot a 29 inch draw, 70 pounds. And that 150 grains in the front has always seemed to produce my best shooting hunting setups with fixed blade broadheads.
Yeah.
So I don't really worry so much about where that works out from an FOC standpoint. I just know that it works.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you like to run?
Go ahead.
I was just saying, do you like to run like a 100 grain point with a 50 grain insert, or do you run like 125 and then have your more standard, you know, like a 25 grain insert?
I do both. It just depends on what's available for the given arrow that I'm shooting. So,
okay.
Last year I shot the 125 with the standard, like I think it's a 22 grain insert in the deep six mm-hmm. arrows. And then the year previous I used the VAP inserts with the 100 grain setup. So, because they were like 42 grains, so I had 142 up front. So, it's okay. Not exactly 150 by any means, but I like to try. That's kind of my target number that I'm shooting for.
Any other big topics related to arrow setup, arrow building, arrow selection that are critical for broadhead flight?
Just finding the. I don't think we touched on finding the right spine for your particular bow, and you asked. Mm-hmm. Kind of what you could do about it if you were on the edge one way or another. one thing that will show your spine issues pretty quick is shooting at distance, say 70 meters or something, and just looking at your horizontal groups on a relatively calm day. Then you can take your poundage up and down and see if those groups spread out more horizontally or if they'll shrink horizontally. Another way to do it is with point weight. So you can experiment a little bit and possibly see where, you know, hey, if I drop my peak weight by 2 pounds, my group size shrinks by a third, then you'll know that you're probably a little bit underspined. And I'd way rather knock 2 pounds off my peak weight and have, you know, better groups than the alternative of, you know, hey, I'm losing 6 feet a second or whatever.
Right. Have you found, like, you said reduce your group size by a third. I mean, like, what's are you satisfied with, like, paper tuning and getting good broadhead flight and calling it good from there? Or, I mean, can you significantly, say, like, go from a 7-inch group to a 5-inch group out there at 70 yards by just tweaking your weight, like, you know, changing, dropping a pound? I mean, is it that substantial?
It can be if you're on the ragged edge, but I would usually do that kind of testing if I didn't feel like my bow was producing as good a result as I felt like I was shooting it. You know, if I felt like I was holding, you know, a 4-inch group at, you know, 70 meters or 70 yards, and I was getting 6 or 7 inches, then I might do a little bit of more testing with, you know, different weights and try to play it and dial in my dynamic spine a little bit better. Otherwise, I do just basically start with a paper tune, and I'll just start with a bare shaft and get that into where it's just poking a perfect hole, and then I'll shoot some fletch shafts and make sure that they're, you know, not having any contact or anything like that, so they're still shooting a good hole, and then I'll go out and shoot those and just see how they perform. And 95, you know, after doing it for 20 years, I know what my spine needs to be for a given weight range. If I get much out of that from a poundage standpoint or whatever, then I know I might have some issues. One thing that surprised me a ton this year, though, was that the RX1, I expected to need a stiffer arrow because it's a 6-inch brace height and, you know, got an inch of extra power stroke, and was shooting my arrows almost 15 feet a second faster. And I think because of the grip position change, it actually mellowed out the knock travel on that bow, and I easily shot the same spine as I had the previous year. So that was kind of a little bit of a surprise there.
You kind of mentioned you're shooting 29 inches, 70-ish pounds. Are you shooting a 330-ish range spine?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I run 330s.
And that's even with 150 up front?
Yep.
Okay.
And I don't shoot much overdraw. I'm running the AAE Pro Drop style rest.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a rigged up as a limb driver off the top limb. And it's, you know, basically just in a stock position wherever it lands, just behind the burger button.
So your paper tuning process, you mentioned you go bare shaft and then move to fletched. Just real quick, what distances do you like to paper tune?
So I'll start off at, you know, about 3 yards or something like that. And then I'll work my way back to about 7 yards. That's usually where you get your worst tune. So start by getting it dialed in really good up close, and then I'll move back to that 7-yard range and then kind of fine tune it there. And then once it's punching perfect holes consistently there, then I can basically screw broadhead on and go shoot it and see if it's performing.
And when you're in the paper tuning process, are you adjusting rest? Or are you adjusting, like on a hole, you're adjusting yoke? What adjustments are you making to get that good hole?
So I like my center shot to be where your center shot looks like it should be, you know, basically right down the middle of your grip. So I'll usually adjust the rest of that position. I'll set the knock height so that it's So my arrow runs maybe just a little bit below, or the top of my arrow runs through the center of the burger button hole. And then I'll set that up to where it's basically 90 degrees, maybe a little bit knock high by an eighth or so. And I just eyeball all this stuff. I'm not measuring anything. I'm just, you know, slapping stuff together, eyeballing it. I've looked at so many of them over the years that, you know, I know where it kind of needs to be to be in the geometric center of the riser and whatnot. And then after that, I just go to the paper and I'll make often a few minor tweaks with yoke tuning, and it usually doesn't take much, and it's, you know, center shot's nailed. Bows, I don't know, the Hoyts I've shot the last 5 years usually took a little bit of tweaking on rest height more than anything to get that set, to get a, you know, the tear to mellow out up and down. But these newer bows seem to be really consistent and easy to tune vertically now. So, I think Hoyt's done some good things as far as tunability on this, on the RX1 platform. The new cam, the split yoke down below and stuff. I think they're definitely less critical on spine and seem to tune really nice.
So when you mentioned tuning vertically for that and adjusting rest height, are you ever in a situation where you're adjusting both knock and rest height, or it's simply a matter of just adjusting the rest and, you know, the angle off the string, if you will, changes to be whatever that needs to be?
I do a little bit of both. So it depends on the rest. Like on a limb driver rest, where if I adjust the height, that might mean I need to tweak my cable length as well, the drop cable. Then I'll probably just screw down my my D-loop, adjust its so the actual knocking point. So I'll just tie what I call a Billy Bob loop. It's a lazy loop. Just basically a raw loop, get everything tuned, and then after that, then I'll go back, cut that one off, and then tie knock sets in there and do it right after I get everything tuned. So, but yeah, with the drop away rest, it's usually a little bit more convenient to move the knocking point, just because you don't have to dink with the cable length and things like that.
So for someone who maybe is getting good flight through paper, but then gets out down range, maybe screws some broadheads on, and they're having issues, where do you start with troubleshooting that? Do you think it's a spine issue? Do you go back to some sort of setup in the bow tune, the bow configuration? Like, where can they start to troubleshoot great paper but not good broadhead performance?
Yeah, those are tough cases, you know, without actually having hands-on. I mean, I guess the first thing I would probably look at was spine, and then I'd also want to powder some of their arrows really quick, because I've seen guys get bullet hole flight with some pretty wicked contact. Stuff's just hitting enough that they're getting, you know, a good tear through paper, and it's consistent, but it does things, you know, downrange, you know, or it might have a good bullet hole at one distance, but then you move another 3 feet and all of a sudden it's going haywire. So it's kind of a rare case, I think, when people get a good, you know, bullet hole through paper and their broadhead flight isn't very good. But spine could be an issue, because you can, you know, you can tune some bows that are way over or under spine and get them to shoot through paper. So, I mean, that's one potential thing that would, it could tune, but you wouldn't see very good grouping downrange. So it's usually be a spine problem, or, you know, possibly a contact or something like that, but probably spine. And I would just maybe back their draw weight off, you know, by about 4 pounds, and then go shoot some groups real quick and see, you know, what they saw.
Yeah.
That'll usually identify it really quick.
When you're shooting through paper, you mentioned you start with a bare shaft. Are you not worried about the added weight of the vanes once you put them on, or is that, you kind of go back?
Not worried. I haven't seen it affect my tune enough to,
gotcha, to
make me think it's any kind of factor. So it just allows me to diagnose the paper tune a little bit easier, and I see it cleaner. Sometimes when your vanes, you know, knock that Y cut through the paper, it can hide kind of what's going on with that shaft.
Mm.
So
okay.
I,
I see some guys post stuff on Instagram that's like, you know, check it out, my bow's tuned, and I look at the paper and I can see they got, you know, a 3/8 inch tear or something like that.
Right.
I always want to call them out and go, hey, bro, that thing's not tuned. But I find the power to resist somehow. I don't want to be an a-hole.
Nice.
I wouldn't dare post that on my page.
So I don't know if I missed this, but when you said, you know, compensating for spine and then maybe dropping that weight, you know, 3-4 pounds, are you going back to paper at that point or just still seeing what things are looking like downrange on a target?
If you're backing off both limbs equally, then you can probably just, you know, shoot a group right there.
Okay.
And see what's happening. I would do it at the range and, you know, see if it tightened up. And then if I did, I'd leave it there and then go back home and just verify my paper tune was still good later. But even if it did tweak your tune a little bit, if your spine, if you were way underspined and you dropped at 4 pounds and you didn't have a perfect bullet hole anymore, you'd still probably tighten up those groups.
Do you do any other tuning methods besides paper and then just getting arrows down range? Do you do walk back, you know, French tuning, bear shaft tuning, any of that stuff, or you just found that it's not necessary?
I have done it all at one point or another, and bear shaft tuning works. It'll definitely show you when a setup is dialed. Some of my best shooting field archery and FITA setups, setups that I used to, you know, win the team event at Reading, I could shoot arrows at 90 meters without vanes that would shoot in the 10 ring at 90 meters. Those were really good tuned, you know, awesome setups. But I found that those arrows or those setups would also shoot perfect bullet holes through paper. So I think paper gets you, you know, 90% of the way there, and it's really tough to get a bear shaft to fly that good that far down range. So
right.
You know, it works. It's frustrating though for most people. I think they end up bending arrows and having all kinds of issues and not really knowing what to do when they see, you know, different reactions. From a bear shaft, or walk back tuning is a good method too. When I worked with Jesse Broadwater at Hoyt, he would walk up to a target and shoot at like 2 yards and then dial his rest in back at 20 until, you know, they were hitting the same. So that's a form of walk back tuning that he used on his indoor setups. Another effective way, but typically you probably end up with a bullet hole at the end of that as well.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of a quick and dirty way at the range. You can kind of check and see if your center shot's working out.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's one of those things where, and I've done this in the past where it's, you know, especially moving to Hoyt, because I used to shoot other things, didn't have to worry about the yoke at all. But I was used to questions like, okay, do I need to mess with center shot here? Do I need to mess with the yoke? You know, if I'm pretty confident that the spine is what it should be, just any advice for that? I mean, you kind of mentioned you set the center shot, you sometimes even eyeball it, and you just kind of hope to leave it there and work the yoke. But are there ever situations where it really is the rest and it needs to be set and paid more attention to?
You know, 10 years ago, I always, or maybe even longer than that, I always just used the rest and I could tune a bow, but a lot of times my rest would not be in the center, and it didn't seem to affect anything. Those bows shot great. I remember shooting one Tricon came out and we released the Tricon. That bow tuned way outside, and man, I was like shooting over my left knuckle with my arrow, but that bow shot so freaking good at long range with broadhead. It was unbelievable. And then Dave Cousins actually introduced me to yoke tuning. I remember looking at one of his setups when he was at Hoyt. It was actually when we were developing Cam and a Half. We brought Dave into, well, Dave was living down there at the time, and we set up his bow, and Dave would, he always shot really long limbs and he got a lot of left tear action. And I was looking at his setup one day and realized how his cam was cocked way over. And I'm like, dude, what's going on? You know, why is that? He just kind of gave me this look like he didn't really want me to ask him about that anymore. I'm like, what's going on? You know, so I pressured him a little bit. He's like, that's just another way of, you know, tuning the bow. And that was kind of, you know, I don't even know if he invented that or came up with it or if he picked that up from somebody else along the way. But Dave was the first guy I ever saw tune a bow by yoke tuning. And he did it on his two cam setups, even with when he was shooting command cams and winning, you know, every freaking tournament there was to win at that point in his career. And he'd kick those way over and point the cams basically toward the cable guard bar because he was always getting a left tear and leave his rest basically dead center. So he set a bunch of world records and won everything under the sun at that time. And that's when I pretty much realized that cam lean really wasn't that big a deal, and sometimes it could be your friend.
Let's wrap up with this. We didn't want to make the show about broadhead selection, things like that, but at the same time, I'd just love to hear your thoughts on some good things to look for to get an inherently accurate broadhead. Fixed blades, we can talk a bit about mechanicals, if you will, but obviously, many states out there require fixed, and a lot of guys still shoot fixed, even if they're not required to. But what are some of your go-tos? You can mention specifics and or what are just some things to consider when kind of finding that right balance of, you know, cutting diameter and flight and structure and all that that you look for?
Okay. In my experience, shorter broadheads and smaller diameter are almost always going to shoot better. And the ones I can think of off the top of my head that have demonstrated, you know, the by far the best long range consistency are the Slick Trick Standard. That's a 1-inch four blade broadhead. They shoot awesome. The Whack'em Triton. That's 1 1/16 three blade broadhead. Those shoot really good. Long range groups. You know, back in the day, the NAP Nitron was another, you know, short head, had a steeper blade angle, though not necessarily my favorite broadhead design in the world, but man, those things shot like crazy. A head that's built similarly to that now, the QAD Exodus is built kind of like the NAP Nitron. They're real short and stubby. They have a kind of a steep blade angle, not the best design for penetration by any means, but those things shoot really well and they're tough as nails. I usually shoot these days the Slick Trick standard, though it's a 1-inch head, symmetrical four blade and interlocking blades. They've been tough. They've been super accurate and they spin really good right out of the box. So that's kind of what I've been using.
Awesome. That's good to hear.
Nice.
Any oversights that we've made, anything that we haven't covered that would be helpful for our listeners who are trying to get accurate downrange broadhead flight?
I think we did a pretty good job covering the bases. I did write an article on the whole fletching and drag concept and just kind of my thoughts there. And I think you can find that on the Western Hunter website, westernhunter.net, on the blog. If the title of the article is "Does it really fletching matter?" So, because that's one of the most common questions I get too for people is like, "Hey, what vein should I use?" You know, or you know, "Hey, these veins are shooting really good, but I want to try this and that." And, you know, it's like you guys are, you know, pulling your hair out over something that, you know, you can get to the right answer with just about any vein out there. It's just a matter of, you know, finding the right amount of drag until things are shooting good, and then switching to a different vein isn't really going to gain you anything. Mm-hmm. You just got to get back to that, you know, that same level of drag that provides, you know, best groups. But anyway, there's that article's out there. If people want to look that up, it might provide a little bit more depth on what we talked about as far as veins go.
Darren, any other places you'd like to point listeners, follow you on social sites to check out, anything like that?
Yeah, hit me up on Instagram. It's at Darren Cooper on Instagram, and then I'm on Facebook as well. So definitely like hearing from people. I get some questions through there, and you know, when I have time, I'll try to help people out.
I think you've certainly done that in this episode, and we appreciate it, and thanks for your time.
All right. Well, hey, I appreciate you guys having me on.
Well, we hope you enjoyed that episode. As always, if you're enjoying the show, we would love to see your review in iTunes or Stitcher or wherever else you might be listening to this. You can also contact us directly by email to podcast@exomountaingear.com. Stay tuned, and we will catch you next week.